Supervisors will reconvene. We're at item 7B, County Administration.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Angela Davis, County Administrator. This item pertains to our Mr. James Smith, also known as Jim, as our Agricultural Commissioner, Sealer of Weights and Measures, reappointment for a 4-year term. And I am seeking the board's approval for that reappointment.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Not looking for action.
So moved.
I have a motion.
Second.
And second.
Okay. Supervisor Hope.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Sure.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye. I hope it was worth the wait.
Was there any honey coming with that?
Yes.
All right.
I'm going to bring another request later, though, with the honey.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Item 7C, Health and Human Services, Behavioral Health. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Kopsek, members of the board, Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services. And had I seen the agenda prior, I would have brought this on a different day. Because you guys put a very long agenda today. So I'm just going to move through this really quickly. This is MHSA reform, which is coming to the voters in March as Prop 1, along with a bond measure that is to build housing for this population. Go ahead, Anna. I'm going to go through. So as you may recall, MHSA funds is a 1% tax on millionaires that is utilized by behavioral health agencies to fund a variety of programs. It's a very volatile fund, which is one of the issues that's come up, and it's very difficult to budget. I will tell you that in fiscal year 22-23, our department received $3.2 million in MHSA funding, and this year we're on track to receive $6.8 million. So it's a very difficult, and this is just the history of MHSA. So, thank you. So the high-level summary of SB 326, it establishes a 30% set-aside to fund housing with Housing First requirements. Currently, the funding can only be used for individuals who have mental health diagnoses or dual diagnosis with substance use, but not for people who don't have a mental health diagnosis and just have a substance use disorder. So there's no new funding attached to this measure, but it expands the population that we'll need to serve with the money. It overhauls our adult and children's systems of care. It doubles. Currently, the state is allocated 5% of the funds for administration, and that will double to 10%. Some of that funding will go to workforce initiatives and some to prevention services. It eliminates the county-based prevention funding priority. So for our county, what that means is we won't have available funding that we currently utilize to fund the FRCs and the schools through our prevention activities. So we'll be working with them over the next 2 years to strategize about how programs that we funded or other programs that the community is invested in can be funded. First five is the same. It establishes a requirement for some evidence-based programming. It requires us to engage in contracts with the managed care plans, which to some extent we do already. CSAC and CDHGA were very strong in advocating for exemptions for rural counties and successful on some of those fronts, so I can talk about that a little bit more later. And there are significant data reporting requirements attached to this this proposition. Okay, so a little bit more about the changes. As I said, the state currently takes 5% for administration. That would go to 10%. Currently, there are three different components to MHSA: community supports and services, prevention, and innovation. We are allowed to shift up to 20% of that towards workforce education and training and capital facilities and technology. Beginning in 26, July of 26, the state will take 10%. And the new categories will be full service partnership, which is programming for individuals who are sort of the most severely impacted in our system by mental health issues. And 35% for our core services and 30% for housing. Let's skip the next slide. It's a little bit confusing. So housing, 50% will need to go to the chronically homeless. We can use up to 25% for infrastructure, capital development. This is one place where rural exemptions can happen. And for us, that's very helpful just because we're not able to find housing often to support people in. And so I imagine, will be coming back to you with that request if that's required. Housing for FSP consumers will be funded under housing. And you can see the other things. The eligible types of housing services are here. So we do a lot of this already. We provide rental subsidies, operating subsidies, shared housing. All of these things are currently things we are doing, but there's not a requirement to spend any proportion of the funds on these areas for housing. Full service partnerships, again, those are services. Full service partnerships are partnerships that the county engages in with clients who are eligible for our regular services and meet certain other eligibility requirements, like they're homeless or they're involved in the criminal justice system, or for children they're not able to maintain in school. So there's certain other criteria that they need to meet, and that allows us to use money, the FSP money, to provide supports for the individual in meeting their mental health goals. So that's a way for us to access housing supports. For instance, with children, we've paid for different activities to increase socialization, and just a whole variety of things. Evidence-based programming is another place where CSAC and CDHD were successful in advocating for small county exemptions. Evidence-based programs are very expensive to train staff to. The reporting requirements are very cumbersome, and it's difficult with our staffing shortages and turnover to actually develop a workforce that has those skills and maintain it, because the training has to happen. It's quite in depth for the majority of them. Next slide. Behavioral health services and supports, that's what's currently called community services and supports. And one of the things that's happened since MHSA was enacted in 2004 is that it was really the only funding available to mental health systems to expand programming. So we've used mental health funding to expand in terms of staffing. A lot of our telehealth is paid for, telepsychiatry. Some of our crisis work is paid for. We have at least one position that's funded through MHSA. So one of the concerns, right, community services and supports is shrinking, becoming behavioral health services and supports. And so we'll be looking at how to continue to fund sort of those core services that have been funded with MHSA and are funded with MHSA today.
So you lose part of that funding?
We do, and it shifts to housing, and it shifts, you know, to FSP. So again, there are those exemptions, and I intend to take advantage of those to the extent that we need to maintain really that core of our services. But it's a concern throughout the state. There is the ability for counties to shift 7% up to 14% out of any one category to another, and up to 14% from one category to another, just in the regular cycle of things. As you can imagine, this is pretty complex, mm-hmm. right? From an administrative and fiscal perspective, We are lucky in behavioral health at the moment to have a pretty strong fiscal department and some succession planning in place, so I feel better. Had this happened 2 years ago, I would have been in a panic here. But it could happen again, right? And just the administrative burden that comes to us with these changes is significant. And something that, you know, we're all trying to wrap our minds around. I have included all of this just to give you an idea of the requirements. What's important about this, I think, is that currently with the MHSA funding, we go out to the community, we gather information about what's important in all of the communities throughout Siskiyou County, and then we take that information back and we incorporate it into our three-year plan, which I bring to you every year, our three-year plan and our annual updates. What will be new is that we will need to incorporate all of our funding sources into our plan and develop a plan that encompasses all of that. So we receive, as you know, grants. We receive federal participation in the form of Medi-Cal realignment. So there's just multiple sources of funding that we receive. So all of that will need to be incorporated into that plan. And again, just the complexity of that is daunting. So we are working to develop some, we're working with CBHDA and Cal Mesa to develop some modeling and those kinds of things so that we're better prepared to do that. We're required to maintain a prudent reserve. We do that. The amount that we're allowed to keep in the prudent reserve shifts somewhat. So you can see that there. Next slide. So again, currently the state receives 5% of the allocation. That will shift to 10%, and you can see how they plan to use those funds. They, you know, we currently have 19% of MHSA that we can put towards prevention and early intervention, which is the funding we use for the FRCs and the schools. The state intends to shift 4% of the 10% that they receive to the California Department of Public Health for universal prevention services, and there's not a lot of information out there about that, but that is their plan. And again, we will be able to use MHSA for people who have substance use disorders only and not a co-occurring mental health disorder. Plans and updates. These are all of the components of the plan that we will be required to write. Most of this goes into effect with our next three-year plan cycle, which begins in 2026. And so we will be working between now and then to sort of organize all of this information in a way that we can go out to the community, explain, you know, the resources that we have available, and still get feedback on how the community feels that those resources should be spent. This is more that is required. For the plan. Reporting, again, we'll need to report on everything that we receive now, whereas that is not a requirement currently. Currently, there is what's called the ARER, which we submit every year by January 30th, 31st, and that will transition to reporting out on all of these costs. I think that DHCS, while they are our oversight agency, really doesn't understand how behavioral health is funded, and I think they're trying to understand that better through this process. I think transparency is very important, but I also, in a small county managing this workload, as Anna can tell you because she used to do some of this for us, is very cumbersome. So there's data reporting as well. We are able to claim an additional 4% in administrative costs going into the new cycle, so that will be helpful to us. So again, I don't know that The rest of it is just for your information. And again, this goes to the voters on March 5th. And from what I hear, and I've heard different things from different people, it sounds like it's likely to pass. So I'm happy to come back if it passes, if there are questions or you'd like more information. But I wanted you to have the information now prior to the election so that you can make an informed decision.
So with regard to the family resource centers, what impact would Prop 1 have on those through your department?
So prevention funding will go away. So as I said, we spend 19% of MHSA funding the resource centers, first five, the schools, you know, all those contracts that you see come to you. And we don't have other funding currently within our system that we can utilize in that way. So I don't know.
What's the amount roughly that you would lose under Prop 1 for that?
Oh, I can get you that information.
A million?
Yes,
roughly.
A million. It fluctuates a lot, right. But it is 800,000 to 1.2 million,
okay.
I would say,
okay.
Currently. And, you know, if we were able, yeah, it's just the only source of funding that we have for those types of activities.
Right. Questions?
Well, I'll just say this, that CSAC was involved with the negotiation of the global picture, and they did not take a position. Ultimately, there was just split too much between the urban counties who really could be affected. You know, I think there's, from my perspective, rural counties, I don't know if RCRC weighed in, but we need beds, so that's the plus side, but it does have ramifications in how it's going to play out. Ultimately, it's going to get to the voters too.
Understood.
And I'm grateful I did get one email from the constituent asking about that. So again, it's I don't know how the message gets out to a rural county with no media attention other than what we have here in front of us. There's no local newspaper, those kind of things. I'm glad to hear that we have a strong fiscal department at the moment, because it's really a reshuffling of all the funding.
It is,
yeah.
And it's very complex. It is a reshuffling, and just the reporting requirements are just.
And they're difficult to begin with. Now
yes.
They just added another layer.
Yes.
Yeah, we're still paying back.
Don't go there.
Yes, we are. Don't go there.
Because of how complicated it was some 18 years ago.
And will be far beyond our times.
Supervisor Howe?
Just a couple quick ones. I'm not a millionaire, so I'm ignorant of the millionaire's tax.
Just a couple $100,000.
was that already established, or does this establish it within this?
No. In 2004,
okay.
The voters passed MHSA, and that established that tax on the millionaires.
Okay.
And as
this
you can imagine, it's a very...
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I caught it in the PowerPoint. It says it changes county planning processes. Is that... planning under him or planning?
No,
under
it's planning under us. So we go through an extensive planning process. Every time we write a plan, we go out to the community and have public forums and all of that, so it changes that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Supervisor Chris?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, for me, I saw Assemblywoman Dally voted against both bills that led to Prop 1, which you voted to represent the rural areas. I like how you prepared for actions if it does pass. The question I have, nationally the concern is more audits, less money for the programs.
Exactly.
And then the stakeholders, the family resource centers. This happened 12, 15 years ago where money was removed and they had a struggle.
I remember.
It was quite a struggle then. Have we reached out to those relevant stakeholders that are relying upon our portion of their expenses paid for by this, so they can begin their business planning and resiliency?
Not yet. I wanted to bring this to you first.
Okay.
So we are in a 3-year cycle. We're in the middle of the second year.
Okay.
We're in the middle of the first year. So we have 2.5 years from now until the new plan goes into effect. So yes, my plan was to come here first, and then we will meet with all of our contractors, our PE&I contractors, and talk with them about this. And we are really committed to strategizing with them and with First Five, with whom we work really closely on funding to come up with alternatives. It just, we don't have it currently internally. We don't have options. And it may be, I think that, you know, every county is struggling with this, and there are programs that have grown up in every county utilizing PE&I funds. And so it's possible. I think CBHGA will be advocating, once the vote happens, right, currently we can't because the state won't engage. We'll be advocating for something to continue those programs because they're an integral piece of the mental health continuum.
And they play that part, the ounce of cure, that prevention.
Yes, well, prevention, right? And
it's so critical.
Prevention is always tough to fund. So
it's hard to, document.
Yes, exactly. You're documenting a negative, right? Something didn't happen because you did something. Mm-hmm. It's difficult.
It's hard to prove the audits. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. I'm glad to know you're proactive on this and reaching out to the stakeholders and all the folks.
Yes, we'll be setting up that meeting now that I've come and talked to you.
Thank you.
Supervisor Ober.
We've had conversations about this already, and I know that you love change. So one way or the other, change is...
Up to a point, remember. I told you that part, too.
One way or the other, change is going to happen. And you're constantly dealing with a changing budget, no matter whether this is going to pass or not. A budget's going to change, and you have to deal with your staff that changes all the time, financial people that change all the time. So you're always dealing with something that's in flux. So seeing that this is coming down the road, you're already dealing with it, however it's going to land in your lap. My fear is that this is such a huge change and that we don't have the capacity to deal with all of it, and that being a small county, and that we have so much to deal with already with mental health and drug use disorders and all of these things, that this is going to be just a lot for us to handle. And seeing that our resource centers and all of these people that we rely on and agencies that we rely on so heavily to help us are going to suffer, and we have to figure out how to make that goal again. That's going to be a big lift. But we just have to figure out who else. We're just robbing Peter to pay Paul, and on the process, we have to figure out how to manage all these finances and do all the reporting when our real resources are going to suffer. And that's the part that frustrates me the most, is that they're taking away the good stuff and making us do reporting when we really need the services. And that's the part I don't get. I don't get it. So we have to figure out how to make that work the best we can.
Me too.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. I have an amazing staff, I'll say. I mean, they come back to work every day and they work really hard. This is not...
They do.
This is one of many, many changes that we've had to navigate over the past 2 years with payment reform and all of that, UHR, the whole thing. So we're getting pretty good at change, and they are amazing.
Yeah, the one thing that keeps coming back to me every single time we go through this is that we can never find funding that's sustainable. It always keeps changing, and you never know from one day to the next
what
program you have to cut next or where that funding is going to come from, and I think that's the biggest frustration of all.
Sure.
So the FRCs stand to lose roughly about $100,000 a year apiece if this goes through, roughly?
So, yes, to Happy Camp and Tule Lake, we fund a little bit more off the corridor because there's fewer services off the corridor, right? This year, I think the collaborative is somewhere in the $300,000 to $400,000. Okay. I can get
so there's
that.
Substantial dollars for the FRCs
that
are on the line.
Yes.
And I'm hearing there's not a buffer out there anywhere.
We have not identified one. I'm not sure because there is a lot of pushback across the state around this issue, and we'll be going to the state and working with them to develop, you know, other sources of funding for those programs.
With them at a deficit.
But currently, right, currently we're not able to spend that funding in prevention. We don't have a way around that.
And
that
I guess that's
line.
What I'm trying to raise the flag about. Is
yes.
There's a lot on the line here.
Yes, and that is my biggest concern
yeah, sure,
as well
yeah.
as those contractors.
So I'm seeing a lot of TV ads that this is for veterans. Prop 1 is for veterans. And I mean, everybody supports veterans. I get it. But they're not talking about the ramifications. It's not just for veterans in Prop 1, is it? How much is...
So the piece that's for veterans, right, is the bond measure. There is housing in the bond measure.
Okay.
So there's MHSA reform, and it goes with the bond measure. There is money in the bond measure to develop housing for veterans, which is a great idea. That's
right.
Something
yeah.
we really need.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of strings that go with it. So...
Well, that's the...
It's the catch.
Yeah, what's
yeah.
the
yeah.
And RCRC voted to take no action on...
this is Governor Newsom's baby, I think.
Yeah.
And he has a very effective campaign going for that. I haven't seen those ads, but I would imagine they're very...
Particularly around the homeless issue. It's a big issue.
It
you know,
is
so
a big issue,
yeah,
and we need solutions.
And there's going
to
be trade-offs within that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the follow-up question I wanted to ask is that I thought there was... Within the mechanism to shift some funding up to 7%, I think,
mm-hmm.
for, can we do that to take it from here and put it into the FRCs?
No, we can take it and shift it from one component, so housing, FSP, or the you know the core services
okay.
support. We can
within
we
that.
Can move
so,
it within those
yeah, okay.
components,
okay.
but we're explicitly prohibited from using any of that funding for prevention.
So the only other thing I'll leave it at that is that we got some exemptions for the rural counties.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it was pretty.
Yes.
Pretty obvious. There's no capacity. There's no housing. There's none of that. So,
yes, we appreciate that advocacy because
yeah.
it was.
I mean, I know I pushed
originally.
As I was the president, I was pushing for that.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Item 7D, General Services Airports. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy Hall, Director of General Services. I've been asked to bring an update before you guys, each board meeting, on our airports. So today I would like to start out with, I just want to give a report out on our current activities, any of our new information that's coming up with our airports and then expenses. Revenue and expenses. As a side note, I just want to let you guys know that the only way that we make money at our airports is through landing fees, parking fees, and if there happens to be fire activity is kind of a catch-22 because we don't want to have fire activity, but it also gives us money that we could do maintenance and repairs on our airport. So don't want to see it, but we kind of do, yeah. So, and I also want to ask that since I'm going to be bringing this back to you guys, if you have anything that you want me to report on, let me know, and then I can bring that to you at our next meeting. So with that being said, I'm going to start with Scott Valley Airport. The last time that Deputy Director Steve Serdahl, reported that the U.S. Forest Service had expressed an interest in adding more land to Scott Valley Airport. They have started in on that contract for us. They do it on their contract form because they're federal government. So that has started. We're in the midst of doing all of that in there. Not really much more has happened out there since the last time, but I also want to talk to you guys about the revenue and expenses, and I'm gonna tell you guys a little bit about what happened last fiscal year and what's happening this fiscal year for each one of these airports. But I want to bring to your attention that cost allocation is so each of the airports has their own the same fund, but it's their org number that is different. So in the end, it all kind of comes together into the same fund. So with the cost allocation, some of them might have a higher cost allocation and some of them have a negative cost allocation. So when you bring them all together, last fiscal year, in total, the cost allocation was $4,306. But you'll see when I start talking about it that there is some that are very high. So Scott Valley happened to be one of them. So last year, fiscal year, they had a total revenue of $27,974. but their expenses were $90,390. But if you take off the biggest expense was the cost allocation, which was $74,000. So in reality, if you weren't looking at that, their expenses were $16,216 for last fiscal year.
Let's expand a little bit on cost allocation for some that may not know what that is.
So cost allocation pays for any time that the county council does towards for the airport auditors, CAO, and I'm forgetting somebody else.
There's five, I think. Auditor, county council, CAO. I forget the other two.
So it's all the time, the admin time spent for
right.
that, those airports.
So for Scott Valley alone, there was $74,000 in that cost allocation.
And it is based on 2 years prior to that. So if we're looking at the cost allocation when it happened last fiscal year, let's see, we were 22-23, so 21-20, or 2020, it would be 19-20 that they were looking at. So something happened during 19-20 at that airport. Could have been a FAA grant or something like that. It was before my time, so I'm not sure what it was.
Okay.
But that's the reason why it was so high that year.
Okay.
It's because something happened. So this fiscal year for Scott Valley Airport, they've already received $66,000, a little over $66,000, and they've only expended $6,356. The reason why we have so much revenue so far is that we got our final CRISA and CARES Act for Scott Valley Airport. So the next one I'll talk about is SIY. We are increasing our critical aircraft size by using VIRTOWER, which is, they're able to tell the aircraft size and the times that they come in, so this will help in that ALP that we're going to be turning into the FAA to support the length of the runway that we want. And just as we were doing a training with them, and the guy had up on his side of the screen, he had his, and then he allowed us to get into our own. And at that time, I watched a U.S. Marine Corps airplane. It started out like about Mount Shasta area, and I just kind of clicked on it to look to see what it was doing as we were doing the training. And I actually watched it fly into our airport, touch down, take off again, and then go back down south. So it was pretty cool to see it on to watch it all happen. So we, in the meantime, we have been seeking letters of support from, including from Congressman LaMaffa, so that we can support the 7100 length on there. The 7100 length will accommodate all airplanes that fly in there right now, so we think that that's a really good thing. The option for the 7100, the safety zone on the north side will stay in our property line. On the south side, it does go into other property, but it has no, it doesn't affect any road ways. So that's what we're trying to keep up with is on that. Also, we have had support from other people saying that this airport supports MODOC, Siskiyou, and Southern Oregon. So we're really trying to keep that 7100
for fire-related
activities. Yes, this year's entitlements for entitlements that we got for SIY. We are using them on the taxiway efforts in Weed. We're conducting a survey with the SIY tenants to see if there's a need for 100LL out there. That survey will go out tomorrow. We were going to do it on Friday. We were waiting on some extra questions that were coming in. Got it all set up yesterday. Should be able to print it today and mail them all out tomorrow. So that'll go out tomorrow. Still in its infancy stages here, but just a side note that we were approached that there is a fire department that may want to put a fire department out there at our airport. Might be something
that we could look
at Siskiyou.
Yeah.
Yep. Also, we've been approached too that they, and again, this is all just new, but it is something that maybe we need to think about, that they were talking about maybe possibly putting an EOC out there as well. So just something to think about it.
EOC.
Emergency Operations Center.
Okay,
sorry, I use the acronyms because I know I didn't need to say them. So with that, Siskiyou, this is one of the airports that had a negative cost allocation last year. So they received a total of $449,000 in revenue, and we expended $418,000. if we took the negative, which it was only 13,000, we actually expended 432,000 at that airport last year. This year, we've already received 243,000 and some change, and we've spent about 116. The rents and concessions are higher this year because we are now getting paid from the U.S. Forest Service for them renting out the lease out there. And we also received money from the Happy Camp Complex fire. So that's why our revenues are a little bit higher. The land and improvement is the ALP and the PMMP, and that's why we've spent already $116,000 on that airport. The next one that I want to talk about is the Weed Airport. We are going to be starting this month a crack sealing on the taxiway where the hangars are. So we're going to do cement to fix those cracks, and then we're going to lay a rubber seal over the top of it so that it doesn't come up again. It's worked successfully at SIY. We really looked into trying to see whether we should do a coal patch there, whether we should bring a cement truck in, all the things that come along with that, and it really boiled down to we can't do the coal patch because there's extra rocks in there and the tar, and it'll get on the tires, so that's a safety thing. Can't bring a cement truck in there because it's so heavy that we feel that it will crack the taxiway even further. And so we've decided that we will get out there with a couple of our people, hand mix it, get it out there. We have a possibility that we might be able to borrow some employees from another department to help us out on that. So that plan is happening this month. It'll get done. Let's see. AWAS there. So our current AOP says in it that it's a weather station sensor mast. But what we want is an AWAS, which is an automated weather observing system. So because those words are different in our AOP, we have been seeking out FAA approval to approve that wording in there so we can get this AWAS going. We have not heard, basically heard crickets from them. We have not heard any emails, nothing back, but our consultant went to a conference and found out through our FAA ADO at that conference that they were not going to accept that wording. But again, we still have not had that in writing, so that's where we're at kind of with that one. They said that we can do a pen and ink on it, which should be pretty easy to take care of if they allow us to do that. So we're still trying to get that information from them so that we can do the pen and ink. We also reached out to Congressman LaMalfa again for this one, and they said that they will sign a letter of support for us, and as soon as they're done with that, they'll let us know and give it back to us. Let's see. Construction. So the construction is still targeted to start in April. Conduit will be put underneath all of the taxiway, and it's going to be large enough so that it can hold multiple uses. So it'll do the AWAS, it'll do other electrical things, but it will be under the taxiway so we don't have to rip it up, but it'll be ready to go when we're ready to go with that. Phase two will do the north, or this phase is phase one, so we're doing the south end. Phase two will do north end, which is still to come.
Of the taxiway?
Of the taxiway, yes. Yeah. And then we're also going to have a meeting with all the tenants out there to let them know about the construction and what's going to happen and during all the phases and what needs to happen there. So that was it for that one. SIY, this last fiscal year, I'm sorry, not SIY, Weed, sorry. We brought in $293,000 in revenue and they spent $214,000. Most of the revenue came from the fire activities, and then the expenses we're paying for the design grant. Again, this one is the negative one that had the $56,000 negative for cost allocation, so they're essentially paying us back. So really, in actuality, we spent $270,000 in expenses.
Design grant on what?
For the Weed Airport, for the taxiway. So this was last fiscal year.
Yeah,
so,
I know, but wasn't the design done originally?
So there was two grants. There was the design grant, and then there is the construction grant.
Okay.
So what happened in that last fiscal year was the design grant, and then this year
is the construction.
In the construction.
Okay.
Phase,
thank you.
This fiscal year, we've only brought in $17,315. and we've spent $17,325, so for $11.48. This one, the figures will change tremendously because of the construction once that starts happening. And that will be happening in April. So you'll see, start seeing some money being spent there. Any questions on that one? Yep. All right. So lastly, it'll be Butte Valley and Happy Camp. Not too much on those two. We are going to be doing the crack ceiling and painting out at Butte. Out there last year, Butte made $13,807. This came from the CAP grant, and then they expended $8,002. This year, they've made $6. It was from actually from a storage fee. And then we've expended $3,231. And this is mostly from the cost plan and insurance on that airport is where we're going to see those figures. Happy Camp, last year received no revenue, but we expended, we received back $303 because of the negative cost allocation. And this year for Happy Camp, no revenues, and we spent $661, which is administration and some cost allocation. That's it. Any questions, or do you guys have anything you want me to bring to
you next
time?
I'll bring it back to the board here, 1 second. Just a couple things. The consultant was here, Kimberly Horn. Yeah. On the last meeting, they had indicated that the Siskiyou Airport had not had an airport update plan.
ALT?
Since 1987.
Sorry, that's the airport layout plan.
Yeah, is that since 1987? That's what they indicated. And my question is that they were the airport consultant somewhere in 2008 to 2012. And why that hadn't been accomplished then.
I will double check. I want to say it was 2015, but I might be thinking of the wrong
Well, they
airport.
Indicated 1987, because that was part of what they were trying to describe as it being problematic with the runway situation that they were talking about, because that was their focus.
Yeah.
But that kind of caught me off guard.
Let me look into that. Okay. I'll double check
Thank
for you.
Supervisor Howell?
A couple questions. So, we heard from Mr. Shadal last time that federal aircraft don't count as far as the design. Do you know if that's a law or is that something that was promulgated administratively by FAA?
I believe it's FAA, and the reason why I say that is because FAA is federal and the Forest Service is federal. So they don't. Their reasoning behind it is that they don't want federal to pay federal. So, well.
I don't want to pay us.
Yes. So what they're saying is that if the fire side of it wants a larger runway, then they should have to pay for it, not the FAA pay for it, is their stance.
Okay.
All
right. Two questions with that attempt. Where are we with the negotiation or the whatever we're doing back and forth with the abandonment process and the costs?
So the FAA has closed the airport, and we are currently trying, Dana Barton is working on a letter to send so that we can waive the fees that are associated with that airport.
Okay.
What fees?
I'm sorry, we received monies from Caltrans Aeronautical, and we have to spend basically what they do is they say, well, we're going to give you this amount of money, and we will waive it, or we will take off money every year, and it's only a certain percentage. So if you had over, let's just say you had $100,000, and they're only going to take 10% of it a year, you still have that other money that you still have to pay back, and that's what we're asking to be waived.
That's not what I was referring to. I was referring to the Forest Service requirements to do reclamation work.
Oh, that is still at a standstill. I have not. There is no new news on that.
That's a lot more than the FAA fees.
Yeah. Oh, say that again?
That could be a lot more than the other fees you were talking about.
Yes, you're correct.
Yeah, okay. And then just a question. Forest Service does still use the Happy Camp Airport.
Yes, they do.
They don't pay landing fees? I mean, we're not out of that agreement officially yet.
But the airport is officially closed with the FAA, so.
Yeah, but we're still on the hook.
Andy Gellman, Transportation Coordinator. The Happy Camp Airport is federally owned. It does belong to the Forest Service. So when we wrote that lease with them, it was in there that they wouldn't have to pay any landing fees.
Well, that was smart.
No, we got something with Siskiyou in return. It's my understanding there was a swap there of some kind.
Yeah,
we had, from a dollar agreements on the land swap with Scott Valley at one time too. Mm-hmm. That's been dissolved.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking the cost allocation with Scott Valley Airport was probably associated with the repayment.
I'm sure.
That took place there. The runway was repaved at that time.
And this year, the cost allocation and all across the whole board is about $13,000, a little bit over. But every one of the airports, none of them have a negative. They're all just little bits. So it does look better.
So at the end of the day, we support airports. Plus or minus, back of the envelope, are we running negative, breaking even, or making any money?
We're making a little bit because of fire activity.
Which is a double-edged sword.
Yes.
Quite honestly, this is just me. I'd rather do without the fires. It's caused too much havoc and too much infrastructure damage and all the things associated with that.
I didn't do it for this fiscal year, but last fiscal year I did look at the numbers, and as a total for all five airports, we made about $53,000.
I think just on a global thing, and I think this is something where I think the EDC should be involved with our Siskiyou Airport and the Lead Airport. I think if there's ever potential to, if we're going to maintain airports, we should try to look at getting some more revenue out of them, other than trying to maintain airplanes that are really more for the well-to-do than they are for my constituents who are trying to take it up and down the road paying $5 a gallon for gas.
I think I brought that up with Tanya last time.
That's okay. Do you guys hear it? Okay.
I'm just still looking forward to that 7,100 feet.
Yeah, me too.
And if we can figure out a way to get that done, then we can move forward with the EDC and really start looking at the potential for the Siskiyou County Airport.
Yes. There's so much potential.
There is so much potential there.
So much.
That's why I think EDC, well, not just EDC, just economic development
right.
would be a driver of that.
Absolutely.
I think they go hand in hand, not necessarily one or the other.
You know, that's what we've been hoping for a long time, and we need to really keep our focus there, trying to move forward with that. Everything we can do there, infrastructure, size
everything.
Of that, everything moving forward.
Yes.
What I'm hoping for.
That's a question, Chris.
I'm glad to see the outreach from neighboring jurisdictions and areas supporting the length of the Siskiyou Airport. You have it from Oregon as well as other counties in California. Now, what kind of officials?
I know CAL FIRE has weighed in on it, and I know that the Forest Service has also as well, and Caltrans. All three of them have weighed in and said that they support the 7,100.
That's good. Okay. Have you gotten any elected boards or elected officials?
No, not yet. Only Congressman Wilmoffa.
What I mean by that is the one from Oregon, taking the Fazio seat.
No, I haven't, but that is a great idea. I can reach out to them
right.
and see if we can get some letters of support from them as well.
Yeah, I don't know if you've been, says Kingsley, whoever took the Fazio seat in Oregon. Does it touch the congressional district to the east, to the west of us? For services? Who should be Huffman?
Where at?
It would be Congressman Huffman, but I was wondering if our airport benefits to, say, Del Norte or Humboldt or Trinity County.
I mean, my understanding is we're the longest airport other than Reading and Medford. So
I'm thinking even be bipartisan, Congressman Huffman could be a good outreach.
I suggest we also reach out to Monmouth County, the board over there, because they're.
Yeah, we could get all the, if it's cost effective, get the other elected boards. Yes. And then for Butte Valley, I know it played a critical part of the fires a few years back.
Yeah, that's where we made the 13,000.
Yeah. Played a critical role over there.
We have one tenant over there. It's kind of little, you know, but it's one of our loves.
Thank you.
So lastly, if Happy Camp is owned by the Forest Service, then why are we on the line for reclamation part of it to take it out?
So what it was written in the use permit is that if once the use permit goes away, then we have to put it back to the condition that it was.
Was it in?
That's a great question, because Deputy Director Steve Serdahl, he did find out that the airway or the landing, that the runway was already put in when they handed it over to us. So we found that with some documents and some paperwork that say that. So that's where we're at with that. That's the only thing that we really do know about. And they have not come back at us to say that they want it done. Actually, we've had some people say that they want to keep it there for a helicopter pad, which we think would be great. I mean, that would be wonderful for them to be able to do that, and then they could just maintain it themselves.
Right. And then, I hate to keep saying this, but I mean, 18th year on the board, and we always talk about the potential of what our airports are. We need to be taking small bites of the elephant internally. Yes, EDC can play a role at that point, but what we have at Weed would not be there if it hadn't been for an arrangement with the FBO at that time to make the improvement. And I think that's the only way we're going to get an improvement in Siskiyou is if you get an FBO out there that's willing to invest at, you know, I forget what it was for the FBO and Weed, but I think they got like a 20-year contract in order to build that building, which ultimately comes, you know, back to the county at a point. But there was an incentive to do that, and that's where we need to start focusing, because we just keep looking at the elephant and we haven't done anything. Figuratively speaking, I'm not just saying we're ignoring it, but we just need to start taking small bites at it so that we are improving it at least yearly. So anyway, thank you. Anything further?
Just one follow-up.
Sure.
On the special use permit piece down in Happy Camp.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to suggest what we're doing is we're asking a legal question. And it's appropriate at least to carbon copy the Office of General Counsel to the Forest Service in San Francisco, because they're going to make this determination. You're asking a legal question of abandonment based on federal acquisition regulations. And it might speed up the back and forth between this office that you're currently
working on.
So that they're in the loop, because they're going to go down there anyway.
Anyone else? Nothing online, nothing in house. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, was there anything that you guys wanted me to bring back next meeting? Anything that you can think of or that you want me to?
I think just on the progress that's going on today.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, for me, sorry, I've been asked the question a few times in various answers, but the economic aspect of it. I know it's not an expertise of your department, but that's been thrown around for 12 years, or 18 years, the leads on the economic development plan, the consultants. I know we talked about one of the airports a while back, and the consultants said that this actually was more beneficial than what we had recognized. Butte Valley is more beneficial than what we had recognized. Yes. And so having that information shared with us.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Lindy? All right. We'll recess as the Board of Supervisors and convene as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. This is time for public comment. Any public comment in house? Online? None on both counts. So we'll move on to item 8B. Mr. Parker.
Good morning, Matt Parker, Natural Resources. I am here to provide a brief update regarding DWR's review of the Deep Valley Groundwater Sustainability Plan. As you saw in the packet, their GSP was deemed incomplete. And so now we have, at the date of the letter, received 180 days to correct the deficiencies that they outlined in their staff report and resubmit. So that puts the due date to resubmit to DWR on July 16th of this year, so a little less than 6 months to fix the deficiencies. There are two deficiencies. One, we have a disagreement with DWR regarding, we feel the basin is not in overdraft. DWR disagreed based on the limited availability of information we provided. And they also outlined that our metrics used for lowering of groundwater levels is not consistent with CIMA regulations. So, you know, I have Dr. Laura Foglia, who is our consultant, lead on the phone in case you have any technical questions. But, you know, we're just now diving into the process and the details of how to work on this. You know, DWR said we'll meet as many times as you need to work with you on fixing this. We had our first consultation meeting with their staff yesterday, and we, you know, discussed the process to make this correction and resubmit, as well as some of the, we got into some of their reasoning behind the first deficiency regarding their opinion that the basin could be considered overdraft. So yeah, our team, we're just now diving into it. They're researching other basins that have similar deficiencies outlined in their incomplete plans. And so we're just really doing a lot of background research and getting a better understanding of, you know, what we can do to fix this. So I can stop there. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the phone?
It's a matter of changing their minds, redirecting their thoughts, or is it really a matter of researching our data and coming up with a different plan?
I think it's more of your first kind of points. You know, yesterday DWR said maybe it's a matter of semantics and that how we describe why the data we had did not show we were in overdraft. However, they used the same data and different reasoning to say they were. It wasn't like we were in a big disagreement, a big argument. It was just a difference of opinions. And they did admit, they go, you know, this was due in January of 2022, which is 2 years ago. We used data, we had to submit, I mean, we really had to find a plan the end of 2021 based on data that was at least a year old. So we're almost 5 years into this with new data we've developed, modeling, research, et cetera, that's helped build a better picture of what the Valley groundwater looks like. So, you know, we'll have the opportunity to better get that organized. They understood that. They completely, you know, agreed. So I think it's a matter of us telling our story in the manner that we feel strongly about, you know, why the basin is not in overdraft. So, and, you know, a point for all, you know, to tell your constituents, it's not like the GSA is going to come out next week and start turning wells off. State board's not going to show up and start taking over groundwater management, anything like this. We have, I think, a lot of flexibility and time to correct this.
Yeah, I remember the maps, the water flowing in, the water flowing out of the valley, what flows into it groundwater-wise exceeded what was utilized by groundwater pumpers.
Kurt, that's correct, and that's something we discussed with DWR yesterday, is that initially it was felt it was a closed basin where the water stayed there, but with understanding modeling tools that were out there that maybe folks didn't know about, you know, I think the technical folks are, although scratching the surface, are learning that water behaves a little differently in Deep Valley than I initially thought. So
I think it was a USGS study, wasn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Done. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I will probably come back in March with an update. We'll have committee meetings and probably another consultation meeting with DWR, so we can keep you all in the loop.
Go ahead.
I thought we were doing rails, but I just wanted to follow up on the, we will have to come back before the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to work with County Council on. It would, it says, it's weird in the, I guess the regulations, it says the GSA may choose to readopt through a public hearing, but it's, they, you know, have you advise with legal if that's necessary or not. So I'll work with Natalie on, you know, the best foot forward. If we had to do that and put out a notice of public hearing, that would have to go out in April 1, so I'll work with Wendy on that. So we'll be, so that's, you know, 2 months away. So we have a lot of time, but not really, to get through all those steps, but we'll be fine.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Minute approval, item 8C for January 2nd.
Second.
No changes or, right?
No, okay. To either one, to the 16th as well.
Okay.
We approve both.
Both.
Okay, thank
C
you.
And D.
Second vote.
Second degrees.
All righty. Okay, so Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Excuse me, Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Kobzev?
Aye. Well, the jury is Assistant County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. I'm going to move to 13 for public hearings, so we're not holding. I know we have staff and probably members of the public that need to move on that don't want to just sit here and listen to us all day, correct? So we're going to go to 13A, County Council. We'll open public hearing for the second reading of the ordinance amending Section C1 of Section 10-14.100.
Natalie Reed, County Council, and yes, this ordinance amendment or amends the subsection you just recited, adding public nuisance language, and it is simply meant to ensure that the county may refer cases involving unlicensed commercial cannabis activity to the Attorney General. AB 1684 was recently adopted, and it amended the statute that authorized the county's imposition of administrative fines. And under that legislative amendment, if the county declares commercial cannabis activity undertaken without a license to be a public nuisance in its administrative fine ordinance, then the county may refer violation cases to the Attorney General for civil enforcement under the Business and Professions Code.
Thank you. Presentation of correspondence.
No correspondence at the clerk level.
Presentation of reports, arguments, or evidence by staff of other county departments or public agencies. Anyone in-house? Anyone online?
Showing online.
Okay. Proponents, arguments, and or evidence. In-house? Online?
Showing online.
Public comment? Anyone in-house? Anyone online?
Showing none online.
Showing none on all accounts. So there's no rebuttal by proponents, no rebuttal by opponents. We're closing this hearing.
Correct.
And discussion by the board and or action.
Move to approve.
I have a motion to approve.
Second.
And a second.
All righty. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. We'll go on to public hearings item 13B, Community Development Planning Division. Public hearing for the first reading of an ordinance reclassifying land southeast of the community of McLeod off Mill Road on APN 028-530-070. I'll leave it at that. Good morning.
Good morning, Haley Lang, Planning Director. Property owner McLeod Partners LLC have applied for a tentative parcel map to subdivide 23.8 acres of an undeveloped parcel into four parcels and a remainder parcel. The project site is located in the community of McLeod near Mill Road and Columbaro Drive. This action was approved by the Planning Commission at the December 20th, 2023 meeting. And so in order to facilitate the tentative parcel map, the property owners have applied for a zone change to replace the current heavy industrial zoning with rural residential ag 2.5 acre minimum parcel sizes in order to facilitate development of the project site in a manner that would be consistent and compatible with the uses to the west, south, and east of the project site. Both the tentative parcel map and the proposed zone change is found to be compatible and consistent with the general plan, the Subdivision Map Act, and the zoning code. This project is also exempt from CEQA, utilizing the common sense exemption, and at this time, no public comments have been received regarding this project. That concludes my comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Presentation of correspondence.
None at the clerk's level.
Presentation of reports, arguments, or evidence by staff of other county departments or public agencies. Seeing none in-house, online?
Showing none online.
None online. Proponents, arguments, and or evidence? Anyone in-house? Online?
Showing none online.
Nothing. Opponents, arguments, and or evidence? Anyone in-house? None. Online?
Showing none online.
None. Public comment? Anyone in-house? Seeing none, online?
Showing none online.
None. Then there is no rebuttal by proponents or opponents. And are we closing this hearing? No.
We need to continue for the second reading.
Okay.
Yes.
And we have time. It's already been published, so we could place it on the 20th.
20th.
20th? Mm-hmm. And that works for the project people as well?
Yes, okay. It does.
Discussion by board members, and if there is no discussion, I'm looking for action.
So moved.
I have a motion to approve.
Second.
If I could quickly make a comment, I did say no correspondence was received, but we did receive back, unable to forward one of our public hearing notices.
Okay.
And it was to Pubos, Blair, and Jessica Lynn. One of the neighboring property owners.
Okay.
All righty. Okay. Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Copsa?
Aye. All right. We will recess as the Board of Supervisors and go back to item 9 and convene as the Siskiyou Power Authority. 9A is the time for public comment. Is there any public comment in house? Seeing none, any public comment online?
Showing none online.
None online. Minute approval for January 2nd.
Received no corrections.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Motion to approve.
Okay.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Second.
Thank you. All righty. Director Haupt?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Sure.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Copsa?
Aye. We'll adjourn as the Siskiyou Power Authority and reconvene as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. And we are at item 10A, emergency local status of the local emergency related to proliferation of illegal cannabis. And is this something we're going to continue to extend?
So moved.
A motion?
Fixed.
And a second.
And that was to extend. Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Supervisor Hope?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Copsa?
Aye. 11A, appointments.
Okay, this first.
Water District.
Yes, this is an appointment to fill. There's actually two vacancies, I believe, on the Callahan Water District. These would be terms ending December 5, 2025. Clerk's office, we did our posting as normal. And, of course, this is a special district, so members do have to have, are required to file a Form 700 Statement of Economic Interest. And at the time the agenda worksheet was created, the clerk's office had received a letter of interest in serving on the district from Hope Evans. She is eligible as a registered voter residing within the district. And I believe this is the only date we can make an appointment. After that, they'll have to wait until election for the next go-round.
Okay.
Hope, thank you.
Second.
All right, Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Copsa?
Aye. Item 11B, County Clerk appointment for Lakeview Cemetery District.
This one is.
And this one, Mr. Chair, I recused myself when I had a cousin there.
Okay.
Let me make a note. Yes, this is an unscheduled vacancy on the Lakeview Cemetery District, and this is due to a resignation of Kathy Farnham. This would be for a term ending January 5, 2026. The clerk's office, we did our normal posting, as well as asked the district to do their posting as well. And at the time the agenda worksheet was created, we had received a letter of interest in serving from Aaron Chris, who is eligible as a registered voter residing in the district.
Move to appoint. Okay.
Appoint. Appoint. A second.
Whoops. Hang on. Fingers are not doing what I want them to. And that was for Aaron. Okay. Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Okay.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 11C. Appointment to PSA 2.
And Chris is back in, correct?
He's back. I heard him.
I didn't take off lunch.
Alrighty. So our next one is an appointment of one member. This is a scheduled vacancy on the PSA 2 Area Agency on Aging Advisory Board. And this would be a four-year term from the date of appointment. We did our normal posting as well as requesting some information from members of the advisory board and executive board. And it's Lydia Gill, who is already on the advisory council, and this would be a reappointment for her. And I did hear from members who expressed support in her reappointment.
I'll second.
All righty. Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye. Item 11D.
Okay, for this one, it is a scheduled vacancy on the Far Northern Coordinating Council. This is for a two-year term, and it would be ending February 3rd of 2026. Of course, the clerk's office, we did our normal posting. I did reach out to Ginger Moyles, who had been on the board before, and she is not interested in reappointment. So at this time, if we could continue this one for a later date.
Continue it. And then item 11E, Law Library Advisory
Board. Okay, Law Library Advisory Board. This is one that was continued earlier in the year. We have one position filled. We still have two positions that can be, we can make appointments to. I did hear from a gentleman. His name is Joe Linus. He is interested. He is not a member of the California Bar, but I did work with County Counsel's office that there is the ability of one position to be a non-bar member, to be, say, the board chair's representative on that board.
And do we have information on who it is?
Yeah, Mr. Linus, I think I forwarded it to the board a while back.
I didn't get a response back from my board.
That's the general, what he sent me.
I'm not familiar, so I have no clue.
Do you want to continue it to the 20th?
Sure. But how would we find out? I mean,
find out what?
I guess more information.
From him?
Okay. Unless somebody wants to take action, that's fine.
I will say I haven't had much information from our librarian, who Mr. Perry, I believe, now has left the county. And it had gone from the courts to the librarian to be the one that takes care of these meetings. And as yet, I don't believe they've have met much. So I'm a little in the dark as well as to what this Law Library Advisory Board does.
I mean, how many times do we get someone that's willing to step up to the plate?
It's getting harder
to
get people.
I'll make the recommended motion.
Okay.
And that's to appoint Mr. Linus?
I'll go ahead and second.
Okay. All righty. Supervisor Help? Is that an aye?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Supervisor Valenzuela.
Okay.
Supervisor Chris? Supervisor Obrin?
Aye.
And Supervisor Cobson?
I'm going to abstain. I just wish I had more information. Can we just appoint this to a point? I don't know that that works for me. So okay. We'll move on to item, 11?
I think we're to minute approval.
So we're at 12, 12A, minute approval.
And I've heard no corrections on
any of them?
Any of them.
Sorry, table two.
One correction
on
the January 2nd one.
Two, okay.
Page 294, please, Wendy.
Uh-huh.
It had Randy Dixon from the Lakeview Cemetery District, and he's for the, he's of the people at Cemetery District. Yeah, page 294 for January 2nd.
Oh, in my big group of cemetery districts. Okay, correct, Dixon. Should be Picard, P-I-C-A-R-D.
Yeah, so correct.
Okay, I can do that. I'm sure I just, as I was typing, picked up the wrong one.
So do we can approve all three with the correction?
I'm perfectly fine with that.
That's where I'm headed.
So
I have a motion.
Second.
And second.
All righty. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Obrin?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye.
All righty.
We're going to go into closed session. Is there any staff reports? I'm not going to go to board reports, I think. One of the things for, I guess, the press and any public that's here, our next meeting is next Tuesday, February 13th, at COPCO, starting at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
10 a.m. Okay? So we'll go into closed session.
Is that kind of